acharyas in our line. He had a very instructive life, which demonstrates that anyone in any situation can render devotional service and preach Krishna consciousness. Bhaktivinoda Thakur was not a sannyasi. He was a family man. In fact, he had like 13 or so children. 12 or 13 children. And he was a working man. Yet, he did so much extraordinary service for Krishna. Of course, we are not advised to imitate Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Yet we can derive inspiration from his example, that anyone in any situation can teach Krishna consciousness. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he worked as a magistrate for the British Raj. The British were ruling India. And his schedule was that he would come home from work around 5, and then at 7 o'clock at night he would take rest until midnight, and at midnight he would start writing his books. This shows the proper direction of spiritual life, that we want to minimize bodily things. The bodily things are eating, sleeping, mating, and fearing, defending the body from things we're afraid of. We want to minimize those things. So, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he got up at 12 midnight and wrote his books. Throughout his life, he wrote some 100 books while working. He's a working man until the end of his life. Part of his district that he was a manager of included the Jagannath Puri temple, Lord Jagannath. The way things were done then was that the magistrate of the area, he would also supervise the Jagannath temple. So we can see from Bhaktivinoda Thakur, our Srila Prabhupada tells us we should note that his example, his life is showing that preaching is not just a brahmachari or sannyasi's concern. One should not think, oh, I am grihastha, I should simply work and take care of my family and that's it. No. The example of Bhaktivinoda Thakur is that preaching is everyone's business. So, we have already described his schedule in just a little bit. During his time, the mission of Lord Chaitanya had degenerated, meaning that the actual pure purpose had become lost. That is the nature of things in the material world. With material businesses or material governments, they go down after some time. The British Empire is gone. The Russian grip on the world is gone. So the American grip is fading. That's the way it is. So everything in the material world is like that. Even when the Lord's mission appears in this world, it can appear to become more vibrant or less vibrant as the time goes by. That's the way it is in this world. That's why Krishna tells Arjuna that Sakalinaha Mahata Yoga Nashta Parantapa. The knowledge of Bhagavad Gita that I've spoken before, it's become lost. Lost doesn't mean that like the books were lost, the manuscripts were lost, or the words were lost. When you're looking for the origins of Vedic literature, you simply cannot look for the origin of written pages. because the Vedic viewpoint is that writing things down is a symptom of a degraded civilization. An advanced civilization can remember everything by hearing. But people today are so nuts, they think that an advanced civilization is one that writes everything down, has so many books, computers, and word processing programs, and everything to retain all the knowledge. They don't understand that an advanced civilization is one that can hear something once and remember it. So, it was not that the words of the Shastra had disappeared. It was that the proper purport had become obscured. Just like before, Srila Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita as it is. There are so many versions of Bhagavad Gita, but you would never surrender to Krishna after reading them. But when Srila Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita as it is appeared, then people wanted to become a devotee of Krishna because they could see what Krishna was saying, whereas the other versions would simply obscure what Krishna was saying. And in fact, these other versions would try to get rid of Krishna. Hard work to minimize Krishna in Bhagavad Gita, but they were working hard to do that. So, these things happen. At the time of Bhaktivinoda Thakur's appearance, Lord Chaitanya's purports had become very covered and obscure. And there were many sahajiyas, persons who artificially think they're qualified to deal with Krishna's intimate pastimes. In fact, they're so abominable that while engaging in sinful activity, they claim that this is, you know, part of experiencing the confidential, intimate pastimes of Krishna. So they had become very prominent, so much so that bhakti was known as being some kind of cheap, perverted love cult in which so many so-called sadhus were keeping ladies to assist them in their development of so-called conjugal rasa with Krishna. So this is what bhakti was known for very less intelligent, depraved people, very disastrous situation. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, practically speaking, single-handedly revived the clear purport of Lord Chaitanya's mission, separating it from the activities of the sahajas. Very, very extraordinary task. While doing his job, naturally, he would always, besides being a very competent government magistrate, he would make sure that whenever he could do something for Krishna's purposes directly, he would do that. So there's the famous case of the mystic so-called avatar in one village in Orissa. One mystic psychic was calling himself an avatar of Vishnu, and he was cavorting in one of the villages in Orissa. This is the eastern side of India, the Bay of, around the, anyway, eastern side of India. So, this mystic psychic was cavorting and in the village and saying, "I am Vishnu, I'm having a rasa dance, send me all the girls." And the people were so foolish that husbands were sending their wives to the forest. "Yes, you go dance with Vishnu." It shows how people then and people now can easily be taken, they can easily be cheated. People are always ready to accept something cheap. So some people complain to the British government. The government was British then, so when you complain to the government, you have to complain to the British. So the British, they figured, well, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, actually his family name is Kedarnath Dutt. His spiritual name as we know him is Bhaktivinoda Thakur. That's his household name known in society was Kedarnath Dutt. The British figured he's a competent magistrate and he's also a pious man. He's the best one to investigate this affair. I mean, the British, they didn't directly get involved in Indian religious affairs. They left that to the Hindus. All right, we got a Hindu problem here. We'll call Kedarnath Dutt. Let him take care of it. So, Bhaktivinoda Thakur went to the village in regular dress, civilian clothes, and he brought some other policemen with him. They were all wearing regular dress. It's coming in incognito, or not incognito, but coming in low-key. Bhaktivinoda Thakur was very expert, how to handle the situation. He just didn't, you know, say, okay, we're going to go there and nuke the place. So much. Yeah, didn't kind of adopt Rambo tactics. He just kind of, let's, you know, try to deal with this as discreetly as possible, but effectively. So he took some police with him, all wearing regular clothes. So when they approached the mystic psychic avatar, because, you know, the guy had some cheap mystic powers, he knew who this was. He said, oh, you're Kedarnath Dutt. I can make you the king of India. You're such a nice man. Immediately offered him some material, you know, power and influence. Yes, yes, Kedarnath Dutt, don't worry. I can arrange this for you. He said that because he knew that Bhaktivinoda Thakur was going to try to stop his so-called rasa dance, his cavorting. So immediately he tried to buy him off with power and influence. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he tactfully replied, oh, you are a great mystic yogi. What are you doing here in this village? You should come to Jagannath Puri and see Lord Jagannath. In other words, let's get him out of the village, we'll bring him to the city, we'll deal with him there. We don't make a scene here. Well, you're such a great mystic yogi, what are you doing in this village, you know? Come to the city. See Lord Jagannath. Of course, Bhaktivinoda Thakur is obviously sincere in telling him to come see Lord Jagannath. So, then the mystic psychic yogi, he brought Bhaktivinoda Thakur's wrath upon him. He said, why should I go to Jagannath Puri? Lord Jagannath is just wood. I am Vishnu. At that point, Bhaktivinoda Thakur became like fire, because it's a great offense to consider the Lord to be an idol made of wood and to call oneself Vishnu. Some Christians and many Westerners have a hard time understanding the deity form of the Lord. Everything is Krishna's energy. So if he wants, he can appear as wood or stone. You don't see spirit. Your eyes are not able to see the spiritual energy. Therefore, Krishna comes in a way that you can see. Now, when I say, well, is it wood or is it not wood? Is the deity stone or is the deity not stone? But you must understand that everything is Krishna's energy. He can do what he likes. When you say that God is omnipotent, all-powerful, that means God can do what he likes. He can appear through any of his energies. How can you restrict? No, no, Krishna, just don't come here. Don't come this way. Don't come that way. People are always trying to do that. Particularly the form of Lord Jagannath shows that Krishna can appear any way he likes, in any inconceivable way he likes, looking however like he wants. It's not that devotees manufacture how the deity looks. No, Krishna appears as he wants, and the devotees, they worship Krishna as he appears. So when you say God is all powerful, you're meaning also that God can appear through his energies. Just like when you plug something into the PowerPoint there, You have actually the electric generating powerhouse appearing through the PowerPoint in that the energy is there. That is a close approximation. But in terms of the deity form of the Lord, when Lord Jagannath appears as wood, the Lord is directly there. It's not that the powerhouse is directly here. The powerhouse is here manifesting in terms of its energy, the electrical power. But in terms of Lord Jagannath, the deity form of the Lord, the deity is directly there. Because everything is Krishna's energy. You cannot say, well, it's wood. It's separate from Krishna. Wood is the energy of Krishna. If Krishna wants, he can appear directly as his energy. You cannot push the energetic source out of the energy. Krishna can do what he likes. Another example is milk in the cow. The milk is the energy of the cow. Now, it's not that the cow can, you're drinking milk and suddenly the cow is there. But Krishna can do that. That's the point. That's the whole point of the deity. So when you say that God is omnipotent, it means he can appear through whatever energy he wants. And you'll have the energetic source, not simply the energy. So that is the understanding of the deity. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he heard this blasphemy and immediately ordered the arrest of this mystic psychic yogi. Who said, you know, why should I go to Jagannath Puri to see Jagannath? He's wood and I am Vishnu. So immediately the constables brought him under arrest and put him in jail to wait for trial. So then all of Bhaktivinoda Thakur's family were afflicted by high fever, 105 degree Fahrenheit fever. You know, it's a couple of degrees less than death fever. So, very disastrous situation. And everyone knew this is because of the mystic yogi's powers. He's afflicting them in that way. And his wife, Bhaktivinoda Thakur's wife, she got very upset. Oh, I think you've actually imprisoned Vishnu. Let him go so we can get rid of all these fevers. Sometimes ladies, they weaken under stress like that. And due to attachment to bodily situation, they retreat from their Krishna conscious determination. Not simply ladies, though, men also. The body is a powerful thing, and especially when you're attached to your loved ones, your family, your principles can change due to attachment to the body. My wife, my husband, my kids, their bodies, me and mine. So she saw her whole family being afflicted by high fever, 105 degrees, so she said, look, he's Vishnu, obviously, so let him out of jail so we don't die of fever. And what was Bhaktivinoda Thakur's response? We can all die of fever, but he's staying in jail. Let us all die. I don't care, but he's staying in jail. That is proper Krishna conscious family, that one is able to shore up the other. When one weakens, when one partner weakens, the other is able to shore the other one up. Shore up their fortifications. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur told his wife, just point blank, okay, you say we're all going to die of fever if we don't let Vishnu out of the jail? I say, well, we're all going to die then, but this cheater stays in jail. That's the way it is. That was his determination. That's how he ran his Krishna conscious household, setting the example, firm determination. So obviously his wife desisted in the face of such firm determination. So came time for the trial. And the mystic psychic yogi is sitting in the dock, you know, where they keep the people who are accused. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur immediately got down to business. This mystic psychic yogi had long hair. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur ordered, cut his hair. and no barber wanted the job. They were all afraid, because it's well known that mystic yogis, the hair is like source of their powers. These cheap mystic yogis anyway. So no barber would dare come forward to cut his hair. Hair cutting in Vedic culture and its societies still having some Vedic influence, like even today in India. Hair cutting is known as a job for ordinary laborers, things like hair cutting, dentistry, surgeon, things like that. Anything directly involving manipulating the body, cleaning or maintaining the body, that's known as sudra work or laborer work. Hair is considered unclean. So hair cutting is considered it's not like a very creative task. You know, you go to hairdressing school and hairstyling school and you open up a salon, you know, and it's considered very exalted things these days. No, anything to do with hair in Vedic culture is considered, you know, low class. So no barber would take up the job. They were all afraid for their lives. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur personally did it. You may say, what's the big deal of him personally doing it? But besides defying fear, he also defied the occupational system. It's noticed as an unusual thing. No one else would, no barber would do it, so never mind. I'm the government magistrate. No barber wants to take up his occupation out of fear. I'm not afraid. I'll cut his hair personally. So the mystic psychic yogi went to jail, and there, somehow that he killed himself, took some poison. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur's determination won out. So that shows how he used his job however he could to enforce the Shastra. He also had, how he had discretion, tact, and fearlessness, how he maintained the line in his family, how he wrote so many books, did so many things, so active. He rediscovered the holy place of Mayapur. He prophesied the development of Mayapur. He said he looked across the Jalangi River from his house to where Mayapur is now and said, one day there'll be a time when devotees from all over the world will come and chant Jai Sachinandana, all glories to Lord Chaitanya, the son of Mother Sachi. He also prophesied that one day an extraordinary temple would rise there, and from that temple, Lord Gauranga's mission and instructions would emanate throughout the world. So he foretold all these things in the previous century. He was very expert at attracting the people of his age to Krishna consciousness. He could deal with the European mentality and he could deal with the Indian mentality. He was very expert in counteracting bogus spiritual practices. As I said, at that time, the sahajas, the cheap, those who take things cheaply, were everywhere. Just making up all sorts of unauthorized worship of Krishna, unauthorized mantras, unauthorized songs, based on sentiment and sensualism. A particular group of wandering musicians, they would entertain the people by singing songs about unauthorized, concocted songs about Krishna's pastimes. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur was so clever, he would get back at them by himself becoming a songwriter and writing songs as if he was one of them, but he would put the right meaning in and he would criticize their debauchery. So he was very active, that is the point. Always doing something. He was the first one to try and present Krishna consciousness for attracting a Western audience. And he even had some of his books sent overseas to the library in Montreal. Therefore, when you read Bhaktivinoda Thakur, it can be difficult because he's writing according to the mentality of that time, which is, even though it's just, 100 years or more ago, it's very, very different from what it is now. People were just much more philosophic and learned, and their minds are more subtle. So therefore, it's a bit difficult to read Bhaktivinoda Thakur's works. That's why Srila Prabhupada said that he's taken that same thing, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and as well as Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, and you get all that in his purports. Nevertheless, if you've actually read all of Prabhupada's books, and especially on the appearance days of these great acharyas, you can, if you have a decent translation, you can look at their works and you'll see that when you read them, you'll be quite grateful that what Srila Prabhupada did in writing his books. It's quite interesting to see how Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he's saying the same thing that we get in Prabhupada's books, but it's couched in a completely different way. He's dealing with the traditional Indian educated persons who are so philosophically more subtle than anything today. And he's also dealing with the educated European audience who, although they didn't know anything or much about Vedic philosophy, they knew all about the Western philosophers. So there were so many concepts that were quite common then, both from the Western philosophical point of view and the Vedic point of view for the Indians and the Europeans respectively. But these things don't exist now. So therefore, Prabhupada's books, they practically start from point zero. They start from point zero, and they say, okay, animals, let's train you up in how to think. But they don't remain on point zero, they go to the highest. This is the inconceivable thing of Prabhupada's books. They go from ground zero to the highest. So, we'll read just a little bit of Bhaktivinoda Thakur so you can get some appreciation. This is from a book I happen to have called Sri Krishna Samhita. We do a few extracts. You should bear in mind that this book is meant for intelligent persons, not only Indians, but also Europeans of the time. The symptom of pure bhakti is favorable loving service. But favorable loving service unto whom? Brahman, Paramatma, or Narayan? No, it is not to Brahman, because Brahman is an impersonal object of thought. Devotion has no shelter in Brahman, nor is loving service offered to the Paramatma, because Paramatma is known through the path of yoga. Therefore, Paramatma is not the object of devotion. Nor is devotional service exactly meant for Narayan, because all the propensities of bhakti cannot take shelter of Narayan. When a living entity's knowledge of and thirst for Brahman is given up, then knowledge of the Supreme Lord arises along with Shantaras. This ras is meant for Narayan. But this ras has an indifferent mood. When affection for Narayan arises, Then the relationship between servant and Lord awakens. With the feature of Narayan, however, this relationship cannot advance further, because the form of Narayan can never be the goal for Sakya, Vatsalya, or Madhurya rasas. Who will have the courage to put his arm around Narayan's neck and say, "Oh, my friend, I have brought some gift for you. Please take it." Which living entity is able to take Narayan on their lap and kiss him in a parental mood? Who can say, "Oh, my beloved, you are the Lord of my life. I am your wife"? How great is Narayan, the Lord of immense opulence and King of Kings, and how incapable are the insignificant, poor, and fallen living entities? For such living entities, it is extremely difficult to give up the fear, respect, and worship of Lord Narayan. But the worshipful Lord is most merciful and always absorbed in loving pastimes. When the Lord sees the living entity's advancement and awakening of rasas such as Sakya, then the Lord mercifully becomes the object of those advanced rasas and enjoys transcendental pastimes with the living entity. Sri Krishna Chandra is the ideal object for the propensities of bhakti. Therefore, cultivation of Krishna consciousness is the ideal symptom of pure devotional service. So there he's traced the need for bhakti rendered to Krishna even beyond Narayan, but to speak of Paramatma and personal Brahman. This is another section where he's explaining about material attachment. Due to forgetfulness of one's identity, the conditioned living entity, under the influence of false ego, identifies with his body. The preeti means your original spiritual affection meant for Krishna. The preeti, that is the constitutional nature of a living entity, is presently pervertedly transformed into preeti for objects of the senses. In this condition, under the influence of the false ego, the living entity accepts a form made of material elements and their qualities, and with an irreligious mentality and the help of the senses, experiences happiness and distress. It's a good summary of material life. We accept a form made of material elements and material qualities, and with an irreligious mentality, with our senses, we experience happiness and distress. In other words, one's internal feelings are improperly flowing externally. When this current is brought back from external objects, it is called the current of pratyak. The method by which this is achieved is called sadhana bhakti. It's a very good definition of sadhana bhakti, to bring back the current of our original preeti or affection, bring it back from the external sense objects, back to Krishna's purposes. Very good description of Maya. In other words, one's internal feelings are improperly flowing externally. When one's original propensities are carried away by the perverted current and the instrument of the senses, then one becomes absorbed in material objects. These propensities then become absorbed in material sense objects, tasting through the tongue, smelling through the nose, seeing through the eyes, hearing through the ears, and feeling through the skin. This current is so powerful that it is not possible for the mind to check it. This is a very important point. This current is so powerful that it is not possible for the mind to check it. The process for checking this current is mentioned in Bhagavad Gita as follows. Visaya vinivartante narahasya dehina rasavajam masopyasya palam jasvanavartate. There are two ways for checking this current. If an embodied soul is deprived of sense enjoyment, his taste for sense objects will certainly be checked. But it is impossible for an embodied soul to remain aloof from material sense objects. So if there is another process to check this current, then it is one's duty to follow that process. There is one ultimate process to divert the current of attachment from sense objects. When the current of attachment meets rasa, it is enchanted. So if that current is diverted to a rasa that is superior to material rasa, it will naturally accept the superior rasa. As stated in Srimad Bhagavatam, evam ninam kya yoga sarve samshati hejava ta evatma vinashaya kalpante kalpitat prade. Thus, when all a man's activities are dedicated to the service of the Lord, those very activities which caused his perpetual bondage become the destroyer of the tree of work. So, there's just a glimpse of some of Bhaktivinoda Thakur's writings. Many books he wrote in Bengali, some in English. The English ones that he wrote are a bit difficult for us to read now because the English is so different. And then, of course, when you read books of his that have been translated from Bengali, then you have to deal with the expertise of the translator. So these are some things we should bear in mind about Bhaktivinoda Thakur. He showed that anyone who knows the science of Krishna can teach Krishna consciousness, whether they're sannyasi, grihastha, whatever. He showed how to be always absorbed in Krishna's service and how even a householder can make preaching his business. So he had 12 or 13 children. He was able to function in a Krishna conscious way with such a large family. But we're not advised to imitate. His son, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, Srila Prabhupada's spiritual master, that's the son of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. He didn't have any children. He never married. He said, if I was able to have Krishna conscious children, then I would engage in procreation hundreds of times. But he's pointing out, it's no simple, easy thing. Therefore, he presented himself as incapable of that. Of course, that's his humility. These are all things we have to take into account. We should not just race off into various directions without due contemplation of the sacrifices and responsibilities required. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, we cannot speculate about his spiritual potency, how he was able to be a government manager, have such a huge family, and write 100 books. But at least we can try to follow his example, although we cannot imitate his extraordinary prowess. So any questions? Yes. To think that we have qualified ourselves for the higher levels of Krishna consciousness prematurely. Oh, Krishna Radha, I'm with Krishna and Radha. Yes, we've seen that tendency come and go from time to time amongst devotees. Therefore, we try to act in such a way that Krishna will want to see us, not that we will see Krishna. We try to do attractive service. Any other questions? That's a long story. A long story. Reveals Krishna's independence and reciprocation with his devotee. All right. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare.